Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. I am mellifluous today, I've got to tell you that. I'm feeling pretty good because this is the Lunch Cancer Show. Now, I'll explain this before I introduce Rick because he'll mess it up.
Because it requires explanation.
Some of our radio fans are aware that in all seriousness, I am very, very concerned about lung cancer, which is rampant in Eastern Kentucky.
We
have the highest
honest,
rates in the country.
Close to the word lunch.
And so I was asked to keynote a session in Louisville on lung cancer, and in the brochure under the session it says lung cancer, but in the lead and on the front page it says a keynote lecture on lunch cancer. And lunch cancer is now my new favorite way to describe obesity.
It's kind of ruthless, isn't it? You know, and the funny thing is, you looked right at me when you said that. Why did you do that?
Because I expected you to have a reaction, and I was not disappointed. But at any rate, I am a lunch cancer expert. So
you're about
that,
to get
Rick.
Beat up cancer.
No, well, what, do I study lunch cancer or do I have lunch cancer? I'm a lunch cancer survivor. But now that I have wasted much of your first fractional portion, it's time to introduce our co-medical host. First of all, thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, and also a big radio wave to the listeners at the Ronald E. Glenn Space Science Center. My co-medical host from the University of Kentucky, the Physician Assistant Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hey, Shelley.
Hello.
And from the University of Kentucky as well, Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, to explain to you about how Health Matters resides in the internet, on the airwaves, Rick Phillips. In the cloud. How about that, Rick?
During lunch.
Health Matters. We'll explain the cloudiness of Health Matters. Go, Rick.
If you want to listen to what happened last week on the show, go to WMKY.org. That's Morehead State Public Radio's website. There's a list of all the shows. You just got to find Health Matters in the menu there, and there's a bunch of other shows on the radio station, and they'd probably want us to plug them and say they're all great and go listen to them, but really, go to Health Matters. Look at the Health Matters shows. There's, again, the most recent shows. There's a link to the audio. You can download it. You can listen to it. You can sign up for the podcast. Do I have to tell you what a podcast is? Just sign up for it, and you'll enjoy Health Matters about 4 days after it airs on the radio. It shows up on the internet, and you'll be able to listen to it at your convenience. After that, you want to get in on the action. You want to make fun of us. You want to just say all the things that you want to say. Do that on Facebook, facebook.com/HM Radio Show. That is our fan page. Yes, Facebook lets us have a fan page. They don't have a minimum requirement, so we do meet the requirement. Jump out there, say something, let us know what you're thinking, give us some feedback, make fun of Tony, do all kinds of things out there, but it's your opportunity to weigh in on what is Health Matters to you. And again, you can find that on facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, lung cancer screening. You screen, I screen, we all screen for lung cancer. This, in all seriousness, is what I'll be talking about as we record this. It'll be a couple of weeks from our recording time. Should be about the time this show airs. Lung cancer, the third most common cancer, the leading cause of cancer death in the United States, and it's not even close. Lung cancer kills more people than the next three cancers combined. It's horrific. It is a still close as you can get lung and pancreatic cancer to a death sentence. And it's fairly simple to know why that happens. Lung cancer can grow in the chest unknown until it makes itself known with symptoms. By then, it is too late to do anything useful about it. You do get radiation and chemotherapy, which can prolong your life a little bit, but there's no way to cure it once it becomes symptomatic. Same thing with pancreatic cancer in the abdomen. It hides, it grows around major vital structures, and then it makes itself known, and it's too late to do anything about it. Now, we don't know how to screen for pancreatic cancer, but we have some research indicating we can screen for lung cancer. Just like we screen for colon cancer with colonoscopies, we screen for cervical cancer with pap smears or HPV testing of the cervix. Just like we screen for breast cancer with mammograms, we now can screen for lung cancer. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends annual, that's yearly screening for lung cancer with a CAT scan in adults who are ages 55 to 80 who have had a what we call a 30-pack year smoking. That is, you smoke for 30 years, one pack a day. You have smoked for 15 years, two packs a day. You have smoked 30, the number of the packs of cigarettes per day times the number of years you have smoked equals 30 or greater. And you have quit less than 15 years. And that's an important thing. Let's say you're 55 and you quit when you were 48 or something like that. It's still recommended that you get screened because your risk of lung cancer is still elevated. It appears that the people at highest risk are African Americans, people with a family history of lung cancer, and people who have had other types of cancers. I have a patient that I saw that was being treated for another type of cancer, still a heavy smoker, and we recommended that person get screened for lung cancer, and she's going to check that out. So again, adults ages 55 to 80, Medicare will pay for 55 to 77, and they have a 30-pack year smoking history, quit less than 15 years, a yearly CAT scan to screen for lung cancer is recommended. And if you know the suffering that this condition causes, if you've seen someone or had a loved one to go through this condition, you know this is not something that it's a plus or minus whether you should be screened. This is something that you want to catch early. You want to catch while you still have a chance for cure. The cure is surgical. It's not like you're going to treat it with antibiotics and it's going to evaporate. But if we can get it small enough, you have a chance to get it out completely with surgery without destroying your lung, then you can survive. Whereas if it gets bigger, unfortunately, the five-year survival rate for lung cancer is still around 16%, meaning that over 80% of the people that get it are going to be dead in 5 years. That is a horrendous cancer. It really is very difficult to treat. It's also very difficult to live with. There isn't a remission. There aren't grace periods. Once you're diagnosed, it is a steady downhill course. And so we feel that type of screening may be able to save some of the misery we see from lung cancer victims in Eastern Kentucky. That's our sponsor, lung cancer screening. Not unlike lung cancer is real and is a present danger to Kentuckians. Kills 3,500 Kentuckians every year. We have the nation's leading rate of lung cancer, and there is a screening test. Please talk to your friends, your loved ones who have smoked more than 30 years, and talk to them about lung cancer screening. All right, we start the show with now only a few minutes left in the first fractional portion. This came from the Translational Journal of the American College of Sports Medicine. Not something that I read regularly, but I saw a summary. It was published August 22nd, and they surveyed more than 1,000 adults ages 18 to 45 across 46 states about their best and worst memories of their PE classes in school.
Okay.
Do people really have both those, a best and a worst? It's either all great or all horrible.
I bet, though, if you did sit-ups till you threw up, that would be a bad day.
So Tony, I can tell you, I was a jock, so I had gym class. There is no way on the face of this planet. I'll even tell you what the classes were in, and you can't guess what my best and my worst moment in gym class was.
Well, you set up something impossible, and then you act as if I'm going to take it personally that I can't do it. That's fine. Okay.
Those are your rules.
You're bigger than I am.
You're not up to the challenge?
Well, I will say for our radio fans that haven't been around Rick and me very long, Rick, in high school, was a football player. You played line. You played
I did.
Defensive line?
Both.
Both ways, line. But also, interestingly enough, a roller skater.
Right. Does not factor into this discussion.
So I was curious about that.
You just were trying to get that out there, weren't you?
If you think about a defensive lineman on roller skates, right away you realize why
nimble.
Rick is
think
used
nimble.
To being
think nimble.
No, you realize why Rick is used to being made fun of. I mean, yeah. Because after
at
all,
6 foot two, nobody made fun of me, Tony.
somebody just got checked. I'm not sure which one of you it is.
Well, the thing is, let's say if you laughed at him, he would skate you down.
You could not get away.
That's right.
I gave up. I really
am your worst nightmare, defensive lineman on roller skates.
Funny you say that, though, but I really was a good roller skater, but I gave it up as a freshman in high school. I
really?
Pretty much quit doing it. But when I moved from East Coast to West Coast. I moved from Franklin, Kentucky to Arizona.
Just don't skate out there on the West Coast.
Well, it's different. It's different, and it wasn't the West Coast. It was Southern Arizona.
I understand, but I was making a point.
But they just didn't, and so I gave it up. So, no, that doesn't factor into this discussion
all right.
at all.
So let's go back, because in the interest of actually having a radio show.
So
I've got to figure out what's your best and worst.
Well, I really best is hard to say because you know gym class was gym class was the first period of the day, and I only had 4 hours of class on my senior year, so I went in like
every day was the
sweats.
Best day.
I just got up in the morning and didn't have to really get dressed. I got dressed after gym class, which was kind of cool.
So we are focusing on your worst day in gym class.
My worst day was when the shuttle exploded.
Oh,
I was in gym class when that happened.
This was the Challenger space shuttle.
It happened right during the middle of class, and we all had to stop what we were doing and address that. It was tragic. It was horrible. It was the worst day of gym class, and I knew you couldn't guess that.
No, I couldn't run the time backwards. I was to let you know our differences in age. I was a resident at the time. I was at the VA hospital.
Well, I was a resident too. I was just a resident of my parents.
Yeah, you're in your parents' house. So it's a thing to think about. But that actually did not. That was not even mentioned among these survey respondents. 1,000 adults ages 18 to 45. For some reason, I don't know why. 392 males, 632 female respondents. Memories, and now this is what they found. Memories of enjoying PE were the most substantial correlates of present-day attitudes and intentions for physical activity. Rarely being chosen first for team sports and gym class was strongly related to the amount of time spent sitting on weekdays and on the weekend in adulthood. And I wish I had Gene Jones, because Gene has the proper amount of skepticism for science. Gene knows how to call things when she sees them. But I do not believe that there was an NFL star running back in the making who had a bad gym class experience and abandoned the sport. My thinking is that most people who are like Rick, play sports in high school and certainly in college and professional, have good memories of gym class because that's where they excel. Just like I don't particularly have bad memories of a math class or things like that. These are things I can do well, and gym class was not one of them. I have good and bad memories, but I was certainly not a star in gym class. So I will tell you right now, I had problems with this.
I lost my class ring in gym class.
Well, that was bad. You're beating up.
Wasn't as bad as the shuttle blowing up, though.
Yeah.
It was a close second.
I could see it. And Rick's not that cavalier that for our radio.
That fans. Was a joke. That really was. Right. That was.
So 34%, and it's too soon. 34% of the respondents reported feeling embarrassed by their childhood PE experience. The next most frequent lack of enjoyment was lack of enjoyment PE activities, 18%. And so their point is that we should try to create enjoyable physical education activities for our kids.
So dodgeball's not it.
That's exactly what they were saying, is we need to avoid stuff like that. We're going to avoid talking about this more by taking a break.
And play some dodgeball.
And you should do so, too. Not the dodgeball. Just take a break. And we'll come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. We've been having a good laugh here, but we're ready to start the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Lunch Cancer Show, and we're hoping that none of our radio fans suffers from lunch cancer. Have it detected early. I don't know, for no particular reason. Our sponsor is actually lung cancer, which is what they're
trying to say. Is lunch cancer when you walk up to the buffet and it's all it's got is cold salads?
I think lunch cancer is a beer belly. It is an uncontrolled growth. Related.
Yeah, but
to,
that takes years to make.
It does. It's a slow-growing cancer.
Yeah, whereas, buffets in general, it can come on pretty quickly.
Well.
But the thing we're actually talking about is lung cancer, the third most common cancer, the leading cause of cancer death in the United States. Far and away, over a quarter of a million people dying from lung cancer in the United States every year. Kentucky's burden, 3,500 and change people die every year, and most of them heavily predominant in eastern Kentucky. Our lung cancer rates are 2 to 3 times that of the national average. So this is a disease that is absolutely devastating, mainly to uneducated, mainly to people from lower socioeconomic strata, mainly to people in eastern Kentucky. And that's why I get so upset about this. The most important risk factor, obviously smoking. We want people to stop smoking as soon as they can. And we would prefer people not start smoking in the first place. But we still have in Kentucky among People who have a high school education or less, our smoking rates are close to 48%. It is absurd how much cigarette smoking remains in our state. So what do? Well, we can screen for lung cancer. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends annual screening, yearly screening for lung cancer. If you are 55 to 80 years old, you have smoked a pack a day for 30 years, and you've quit, either you're still smoking or you quit within the past 15. If it's been more than 15 years, don't screen. If you are over age 80, certainly don't screen. If you're not willing to have surgery, if they do find a cancer, then don't get the scan. You don't want to know. Regardless of whether you get the scan or not, whether you get screened or not, you need to stop smoking as soon as you can. That is the best thing you can do for your health. That's our sponsor, Lung Cancer Screening. You screen, I screen, we all screen for lung cancer. Now, we were talking about our experiences, so I'll go first. I had, and then Shelley can chime in because Rick and I did most of the talking, as we always do during the break, and I apologize.
Hey, look, we didn't get violent.
No. That's true.
We didn't get violent.
Now, Rick is not as fast without roller skates, as it turns out, and I definitely managed to dance around our producer, Brian Courtney.
And the dodgeballs.
Yeah, the dodgeballs. And so Brian took one to the chin, but I'm fine. Don't worry about me. Just
so far.
Yeah. So at any rate. But in the 1960s, we had, of course, duck and cover drills because we were concerned that the Russians were going to destroy us by nuclear
weapons. Tony and I were discussing the fact that the age group that we cited was 45, and I'm 50. So there's a good chance that people weren't in gym class.
When
the Challenger exploded. Yeah. So I was a little bit different. I wasn't quite in the age group. And so then got us to talking about who had everybody's ages.
In elementary school, have you been listening to Health Matters for a long, long time? What I did was, and my classmates did, is we did calisthenics to the Kennedy administration asked the producer, I guess the man who wrote The Music Man, to record a exercise song. And it was called the Chicken Fat Song. And so they would play the Chicken Fat Song, and we would do calisthenics because we were going to be able to defeat the Soviet children in hand-to-hand combat after they launched their nuclear weapons.
So you were in boot camp. That was your PE in elementary school.
We had Miss Knopfsinger. We called her Miss Snotslinger, and she would put on the chicken fat video, and we would do as many sit-ups as possible until we got sick, and that was how you did it. I was not a particularly athletic kid in elementary school. I loved to read a whole lot. I wore glasses. I couldn't see the baseball quite well.
So you weren't the first pick in dodgeball?
No, certainly. Well, in dodgeball, I was the target. I made a very nice target.
There were those of us who were the first pick.
Yeah.
Not the captain, but the first pick.
Yeah.
And then there were you.
I wouldn't be a first pick for much of anything in
a spelling bee.
But see, I didn't mind that. It didn't really worry me too much that I wasn't the first pick because I frankly wasn't, I wasn't going to carry the team. And I knew that. I was smart enough to know that. But I will tell you, calisthenics to Chicken Fat Song was not the way you want to spend your morning. That Chicken Fat Song has died a very merciful death.
So,
and no one uses that now for their fitness routines, although it could be kind of fun.
Just to point out how different of a life we led, right?
Hit it, Rick.
You dealt with that. I grew up in the HR puff and stuff area, right? So all we talked about was like singing songs and crazy hallucinogens, right? That was what was going on in the middle of the 70s.
But did that bleed over into gym class?
I can't talk about that.
Okay.
Can't talk about that. I'm still, there's the statute of limitations isn't up on
Jim,
that.
I'm not sure that the Arizona is much different than the West Coast. I mean, the way you describe it, it sounds to me like you were basically on some type of psychedelic hippie stuff.
I wasn't just in southern Arizona. I was 20 miles from the Mexican border.
Okay.
I was 20 miles north of a little town called Naco, Mexico, and there was all kinds of illicit activity going on in that high school.
In gym class. Shelley?
Yes.
She can't hold a candle to that.
Yeah. No, I can't.
Now, Shelley is, you may be aware, I have to explain this to our radio fans. Shelley is a girl.
Okay. Which made my gym class completely different from your gym class.
Well, we don't know what goes on in girls' gym class. We had no idea.
Speak for yourself, no. Tony.
Well, so I'm a little bit younger than the rest of the gentlemen in the room. So we didn't have segregated gym class. We had co-ed gym class.
Okay. And your best, worst memories?
We barely had segregated locker rooms.
Moving along here, there were a couple of things. I mean, with this study, once again, people's gym class memories had some degree of influence on their self-perception.
You didn't watch H.R. Puff and Stuff?
I am aware of H.R. Puff and Stuff.
You didn't watch that on Saturday morning?
It was like Barney the Dinosaur before Barney.
On LSD?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a weird thing. I give you that. But this was the time, I mean, you remember the Hamburglar and Grimace the McDonald's characters. Everybody had a large, fluffy...
psychedelic colored
symbol. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, HR Puff.
But I didn't have to do any calisthenics to a chicken fat song.
I know.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, well, by that time we had reached detente and you didn't have to worry about it. All right. So there
what
was this
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm making it up. At any rate, people's gym classes had some degree of influence on their self-perception, their degree of sedentariness. But the association was only modest at the best, says Pantaleimon Ekakakis. I should never have pronounced a Greek person's name. Iowa State University, who talked to, again, this is Reuters Health, so he talked to Reuters. But the point is, as you mentioned, Rick, getting in front of the class, kicking the ball, doing team sports, they needed to have more group games and also non-elimination games.
Well, now, it will be interesting to see what happens with kids nowadays because everybody wins, everybody gets a trophy, everybody participates.
Well,
see what their experience is.
I've got something.
That's funny. I didn't get a trophy. We either won and got a trophy.
I think,
or we didn't win and we looked at the people who did get trophies.
That's the way you remember it. I suspect, actually, the truth is you did get a trophy, but you were not actually mentally able to accept the award.
I got plenty of trophies, especially in roller skating.
That's what I was.
Of
course, I was. Tony, I was a really good roller skater. You don't understand how good I really was.
Well, where do you get a roller skating trophy?
Well, you compete in events. Speed skating, indoor speed skating. I was 13 years old and 6 foot. I had some really long legs, and against 13-year-olds, I could really win some races. Now, when I turned 14 and had to compete against the 14, 15, 16-year-olds, I was terrible. But for 1 year.
For 1 year.
For 1 year.
For 1 year.
I was on top of the
totally
game.
Totally unfair year. Rick was the...
Mother Nature put me on top for
Mayo
1 year.
Mayo Clinic proceedings. This was in August of 2018. Well, it's actually... This one's still in press. It hadn't been published, but it's going to be published in the Mayo Clinic proceedings. And the title of it, which is, I thought, in contradistinction to what I just published, what I just talked about, which was not a terribly good article, this is pretty interesting. This is from Copenhagen. And the title is Various Leisure Time Physical Activities Associated with Wildly Divergent Life Expectancy. So the point is, why as adults do we exercise? Well, it makes us feel good. It may help elevate our mood. It makes us look better. It helps with our diet and so forth. But the bottom line is we expect this exercise will help us live longer, right? And so they wanted to see, well, okay, what exercise actually makes you live the longest? And here's what they did, which I thought was a pretty interesting idea. It's the Copenhagen City Heart Study, the CCHS. It was a population study of 20,000 men and women ages 20 to 98 years old. And they started this thing back in 1976. They gave them a survey, asked them, and part of the survey is, what sports do you play, and how often do you play them? And they then looked at, they followed them for 25 years, 30 years, to see... Up until September, well, they did the survey in September 1994, and they followed them all the way through March 2014. And they said, what type of activities you do? Now, they've already reported that when you look at walking, cycling, and running, walking and cycling are associated with lower risk of mortality. When you look at running or jogging, if you do it slowly, 1 to 2 hours a week with no more than 3 running days a week, that's the most favorable. Yes, any type of jogging or running seems to lower your mortality, again, from this study, but it appears that the more you run, it's not necessarily the longer you live. Then they ask a second question was, well, what other types of activities might be favorably associated with mortality? They looked at tennis, badminton, soccer, jogging, cycling, low-intensity calisthenics, and health club swimming and health club activities such as treadmill, elliptical, and weights. And here's what they found. People, if you compare them to the sedentary group, the ones who played tennis, on average, live 9.7 years longer. Tennis, clearly the winner in terms of adding years to your life expectancy. Badminton added 6.2 years.
Both of which you can play till late stages of life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Soccer, 4.7 years.
Yeah, because you stop when you're 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Cycling, 3.7 years.
Because they never have created something you can wear that looks decent while you do that.
We need a new color because Rick is now he's just making up stuff about why this might be so. Swimming 3.4 years, jogging 3.2 years, calisthenics 3.1 year, and health club activities, that's the ellipticals, the weights and treadmills, that's 1.5 years added to your life.
I'm surprised now, swimming wasn't better.
I was too, actually.
Well,
I guess they don't consider splashing around in the pool swimming.
Well, the conclusion they came to, the leisure time sports that inherently involve more social interaction were associated with the best longevity.
So, now, like, where would racquetball fall in that? Would it be closer to tennis?
Yeah, because you're talking and you're playing with or against other people. And whereas then, if you think about swimming you think about treadmill, you think about ellipticals, those are solitary activities.
Those are associated with diets.
Well, they, you know, that's a point. It may be that the people who were doing those things had a different goal in mind than the others. You say, look, I'm happy, I'm healthy, I'll play a little tennis because I like it. And then you say, okay, I am going to swim laps because that is
my easiest fate on my joints and I have to do this.
Yeah, I have arthritis, I need to lose weight, I'm going to swim. So it may be that the people self-selected, but it is odd that team sports invariably came out ahead of solitary sports in terms of the years added. Now, lots of reasons for that. They tried to control for some things, but you can't understand why people select certain sports. They may be related to their intrinsic health, to their fears, to their socioeconomic status. Maybe, you know, a person who joins the gym may not join the gym to play tennis because they could play tennis for free. And so they join the gym and they want to use the machines.
I can't figure out why anybody would play cricket.
I think it's terrific.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, now granted, our mental capacities are completely different. So,
no, I just think it's absolutely amazing. I don't know the rules.
All I know is they get this really big paddle, and I associate paddles with pain.
Yeah, but if you watch, I mean, it's I think it's more exciting than baseball. I'll put it that way.
He just let that one go.
He did.
Yeah, I heard it. It wasn't funny.
It was. It was hilarious.
Okay.
You obviously didn't get a paddle much.
You know,
when you were a kid.
This show, I had some really useful things, we've kind of got sideways. I don't know what this is, but I really don't know.
You're the one who started off and associated lunch with cancer.
Yeah, I know.
You did that, not us. You. You're the one speaking about it.
Lunch cancer.
Right.
I didn't necessarily associate lunch with cancer.
Well, I mean, somebody did on cancer. Your behalf.
Yeah, but lung cancer doesn't associate lungs with cancer. It's just a cancer of the lungs. This is, I guess, cancer of the lunch. I didn't even pick the topic.
Well,
I've got to make this
I would
up.
Study up if I was you because you've got to speak on it soon.
I've got to speak on it in another week. I've got to be an expert on lunch cancer. So I'm going to
start. So maybe we could talk about that, how that goes at the next.
Sure.
On the next show, let's have you tell us how your lunch cancer went.
Lunch cancer too.
I want a thorough review of the catering services.
I want to see if people actually eat their lunch.
A nice segue. Yeah. I'm going to drop the sports stuff, and I'm going to go to this one because things are getting interesting out in California. We have a listener out in California who is very loyal. His name is Bill. Bill sent me a message on our Facebook page. Sent us a message.
Not just you.
We haven't done anything at all about it because I don't know much about cystic fibrosis, but we'll try to work that in as we can, as we just did, I will point out. But
so let's move on.
Yeah, for Bill and California.
Sorry, Bill.
This was August. Cystic fibrosis. Okay, Bill, we did it. August 30th, the FDA, Commissioner Scott Gottlieb, said requiring a cancer warning on coffee, as proposed in the state of California, would be more likely to mislead consumers than to inform them. Current science indicates that consuming coffee poses no significant risk of cancer, and there is the International Agency of Research on Cancer, which says we cannot find any evidence that coffee causes cancer. Now, here's what happened. There is something called Proposition 65 in California, and Proposition 65, to try to inform the public about the dangers of products, is if you have a chemical in your product that causes cancer, you have to post a warning or you are fined. And so there is a lawyer group that has been taking food vendors to court because they contend that coffee causes cancer. Now, what happened then is a place like Starbucks or 7-Eleven or Dunkin' Donuts or any place that sells coffee has to prove their coffee doesn't cause cancer or pay the fine. This is how this thing worked out in California. So Starbucks is now is litigating. Some others have settled, and they're slapping warning labels on their coffee cups that coffee causes. They can't prove that coffee doesn't cause cancer. Coffee has an ingredient in it that has been shown to cause cancer in mice.
Don't mess with the coffee.
Coffee's been around longer than...
Oh, it absolutely has. Now, I will tell you, in the 1960s and 70s, the studies on coffee linked it to cancer, but that was because people smoked during their coffee breaks. And so coffee drinkers smoked more than people who didn't take a coffee break. And once you pull the cigarettes out, that linkage disappeared. So there is some literature that says coffee causes cancer.
So now we got to figure out what those coffee drinkers are doing that's causing the cancer. That's all they got to figure out now. It's not the coffee. It's something else they're doing. They all have it in common.
Well, but they actually...
Find one other common point.
People who drink coffee have lower rates of cancer. Now, the literature's divided on this because, again, it's really hard to figure out. It's not like you can divide the world into coffee and non-coffee and everything else be the same.
Well, I wish lots we could. Of other things. Yeah. I really wish we could. Then I'd know who to do business with.
Yeah.
You shouldn't trust people who don't drink coffee.
That's true. I agree.
I mean, Tony, I know you don't drink coffee, and there's days where I don't trust you.
Life is just better on coffee.
I mean, yeah, there's no way to make up for that. You just need to drink coffee.
You do. We'll help you.
You guys should get your own show.
Why? We can hijack yours and you bring a producer along with you.
I am so annoyed. I hope you all die of lunch cancer. Back to it.
Well, you're going to die of lack of coffee
cancer. The chemical acrylamide forms during the roasting of coffee beans. It has been linked to cancer in general. But the FDA says that acrylamide, I mean, it's present in a lot of foods, and the doses that it actually occurs in foods, it has not been shown to be a risk for human cancer. Now, the problem is, according to Gottlieb, if California requires a cancer warning on coffee products, then the FDA may step in and overrule them. The FDA is in charge of warnings, and you can't just post warnings that, in fact, are not grounded in science, and this one's not grounded in science.
I bet they drink coffee at the FDA.
It seems to me like we got a whole bunch of coffee sympathizers over there that are hijacking the whole process. You know... Speaking of hijacking the whole process, I am disturbed that we have come to the end of the second fractional portion of our show.
We're not there yet. We can make your life miserable for 29 more seconds.
And we have yet to talk about anything other than lung cancer screening.
Lunch cancer.
It might actually help the fine people that listen to us around the globe.
We talked about all kinds of good things.
I know.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to go,
activity,
we're going to have a staff
good.
Meeting during the break, and we're going to go over the rules of the show. And we're going to come back with our third and final fractional portion, and hopefully some semblance of order, and we can transmit some scientific information. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Lunch Cancer Show. If you want to know why, just listen to the tapes. I'm not talking about it anymore. Rick, our sponsor for the
final
time.
You told me to be quiet.
Lung cancer. You screen, I screen, we all screen for lung cancer. Lung cancer, the leading cause far and away of cancer death in the United States and particularly impactful in eastern Kentucky. Smoking results in 85% of lung cancer cases. It may be higher than that because many of them that were not attributed to smoking in turn were probably caused by secondhand smoke. Prevalence of smoking has decreased in Kentucky. College graduates smoke around 10%. That's the prevalence in people who have graduated from college, whereas people in high school or less, about 48%. Lung cancer disproportionately affects less educated people, lower income people, and they simply don't have a voice. Lung cancer silences its victims. There are very few survivors to talk about it, and something needs to be done. One of the things we can do is screen. We can screen, according to the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, screen for lung cancer every year, starting at age 55. If you are at average risk for lung cancer, that is, you do smoke, and you have smoked more than 30 years, and you have quit within the last 15 years or you have not quit at all, then they recommend screening every year with this low-dose CT. Now, the reason you do this CT is to find a lung cancer when it's small enough to be removed surgically. So if you're not willing or not able to undergo surgery, there's no use in screening. It is important to stop smoking. Screening is not it's not a safe way to smoke. It does not pick them all up. And so it's a part of, with smoking cessation, a part of the way that we can get these horrendous lung cancer death rates under control. Please talk to your friends and your loved ones who are 55 and older and have smoked more than 30 years about the possibility of lung cancer screening. Talk about that with your doctor, and they can help guide you. We at Health Matters do recommend you have that conversation. That's our sponsor, Lung Cancer Screening. You screen, I screen, we all screen for lung cancer. Now, trying to have a informative health-related radio show turned out to be much more difficult than we had envisioned when we put this show together.
What's wrong? We didn't do this.
Yeah,
I think it's just fine.
There are so many words that cannot be said on the air. So I wanted to talk a little bit about medical treatment in older people, in elderly people. It is my theory. Now, this is not a universal truth, but this is my theory, is that lifestyle is very important when you're young. When you're a teenager.
He's making up stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a theory, yes. Okay. That's what you do. When you're a teenager, when you're in your 20s and early 30s, lifestyle is the important way that you protect your health. You learn to eat well. You learn to exercise well. If you're a good roller skater, then you just shut up about it. And you don't really just keep going year after year. You just do it.
Didn't you bring it up?
All right, so back to this. When you are young, you need to develop a healthy lifestyle. Now, sometimes, despite a healthy lifestyle, you can have problems come up like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and so forth. And that's where medications can help in addition to that healthy lifestyle that you learn to develop as a young person. Now, that's one of the things that we need to do. We need to have the healthy lifestyle in place so that we can supplement it with medications judiciously rather than trying to live an unhealthy lifestyle and just smooth it over with medications. Our philosophy there is wrong. But on the other end of it, as we age, the value of the medication starts to become less and the lifestyle becomes more. So in fact, as we get older, we need to, once again, depend predominantly on lifestyle and less on medications. Now, to take it from theoretical to practical, Shelley, you remember that lady that we saw, 100 years old, in the bed. She was on a cholesterol-lowering pill for goodness knows what reason. I suppose to prevent a heart attack at 115. I don't know what they were doing with that cholesterol pill. We took her off that medicine twice. Put back on that medicine by physicians who were well-meaning. I mean, there's no money in it for them, but they simply thought that that was the way to treat a centenarian, is to continue with the medications that we use for people that were half that age. Now, so there is some science to tell us what to do, and this was something published in the British Medical Journal, Open Access, the title, Statins for Primary Prevention of Cardiovascular Events and Mortality in Old and Very Old Adults with and Without Type 2 Diabetes. Now, it's not the best study. It's a retrospective cohort study. What they did was they looked backwards at people who were older and had either been on statins or not. They didn't make the decision to put them on statins, but they looked at people who were and weren't on statins. I'll just tell you what they did. There were almost 50,000 people ages 75 years or older, and they had no evidence of heart disease. Now, this is really important. I am not telling people to stop medicines without talking to your doctor. But if you are over age 75 with no evidence of heart disease, then you are very similar to the people in this study. Now, some of them had type 2 diabetes and they were older. Some of them did not have type 2 diabetes and they were older. And they looked to see whether or not the people on the statins, whether or not they lived longer than the people who were not on the statins. So what they found was those without type 2 diabetes, statin treatment, this is these cholesterol-lowering medicines, was not associated with any reduction in cardiovascular events or all-cause mortality. They died, they had heart attacks at the exact same rate as people who weren't taking the statins and were 75 years of age or older. Even when their risk was high. In the people with in the presence of diabetes, the people who had diabetes, they did have a lower incidence of heart conditions and all-cause mortality, but it decreased after age 85 and disappeared after they reached age 90, even with diabetes. Again, looking at this science, the best we can say is if you have no diabetes, you're over age 75, and you have no heart disease at the start, no clinically apparent heart disease at the start, you're not going to get any benefit. If you have diabetes, You may get some benefit into your 80s, but by age 85, you can't tell the difference. So why in the world are we... just today, I took an 87-year-old person with no evidence of heart disease off of a statin, because I don't think that they really impact outcomes at all.
Well, my concern has always been the adverse effects from the medication. You know, the myopathies, the possible liver impact from taking those medicines on our older patients.
Yeah, the muscle problems are really interesting. You can have inflammation of the muscles, and we can pick that up with some lab tests. But there are other muscle conditions that seem to be associated with these statins. Now, in the United Kingdom, they feel that the research trials have vastly, vastly underestimated the incidence of these side effects. I have had several people tell me that they were on these statins, and they had muscle soreness and muscle fatigue and cramps, and it improved when they went off. Now, the cardiologist will say, well, we should have switched brands, that you can change to a different statin and you can take care of that. And I think, if I'm dealing with a person who's in their 40s and 50s and has a high risk of heart disease, it makes sense to try to push them. I think they're very good drugs in what they do to your heart. I am less enthusiastic. And again, if you come in, if you've got a person who's 85 years old, no diabetes, no heart disease, and we're trying to treat their cholesterol, and they're going to have muscle problems. They're age 85. They're going to be weak. They're going to cramp sometimes. They're going to be sore. Mm-hmm. What do we do with that? I have just said at that age, I just want to pull them off.
Yeah, because it's interesting because age will increase their chance of having cardiovascular disease, but it's also a risk factor for having an adverse effect from taking the medication. So, yeah, you're right. What do we do with that?
Yeah. And my theory is that probably by age, 85 or 90, whatever happens to your arteries has happened to your arteries. So the idea of lowering your future risk, we may be too late at that point. It's established. It is whatever it is. And I don't think at that point, I'm not saying that if you haven't had a stroke by age 85, you won't. It's quite possible. I'm just not sure I can lower your risk of it by adjusting your cholesterol at that point. I believe that has to be done at a younger age if we're going to get the benefits, is my thinking. And so we're back again to lifestyle. In the 80s, it's really important to stay physically active. It's important to exercise your body and your brain. It's important to maintain your weight, to do those things, and have a healthy diet. And I think, once again, that the value of those medicines is less. This is just me talking, but I do have some actual evidence now that indicates we may be on the right track. There was an editorial about this article. It was also in the same issue of the British Medical Journal. And they asked the question, are statins beneficial for primary prevention in people ages 75 and older, and what are the risks? Their conclusions, they said, look, there's a lot of data showing researchers and patients have different views on the importance of what they call morbidity and mortality. Mm-hmm. People over 65 prioritize reductions in heart attack and stroke over avoiding death, in contrast with researchers and those younger than age 65. So, in that case, you may say, I don't care whether it gives me a survival advantage. I'm going to do absolutely everything I can to not have a stroke and not be placed in a nursing home and all that. And so we can talk about that. But if we let people know that certainly after age 75 in non-diabetics, after age 85 in diabetics, we don't see any change in the risk of stroke with the best information we got, it might help them make a more informed decision. Just saying.
I thought an interesting point in that article that they brought out was the idea of a drug dose threshold when they talked about some of the adverse effects, that some of the studies, when they used a lower dose, they didn't have any of the adverse effects in these older adults. But then when they pushed it up to the what we consider an average dose for a younger person, then they would see some of those issues. So, there could be some room to play around with dosing as well.
Yeah, and right now, of course, the mantra is the lower, the better. And so you may be within what would have been a target cholesterol in previous years, and yet your healthcare provider may be pushing harder to try to get you down to the lowest cholesterol level possible. And again, that in terms of side effects, that may not be in your best interest. I think certainly if you or someone you love is on cholesterol-lowering medicines and is experiencing a lot of musculoskeletal problems, it is something to discuss with your provider. And I'll say again, you know, our show, we talk about this research. We try to offer opinions so that people can understand the meaning of the research, but we are not here to advise people to stop their medicines or to take different medicines. That really is a conversation you need to have with a doctor who knows your health. Or a healthcare provider who knows your health, rather than saying the radio show told me to do this, because we don't know the patient, and we feel a long time ago radio shows used to advise people about what medicines to take and what to stop, and this show was created not to do that. We simply provide the information.
We want to talk about the research, why
right.
this, why that,
yeah.
laugh
right.
a little in between, but you know, the ultimate goal isn't to make you change something.
Right. This is all like the hypertension. You know, how low is appropriate for you is very dependent on your risk factors, and we don't know those.
Yeah.
I mean, and ultimately it goes down to our tagline, right? I mean, ask your doctor if health matters is right for you, right? I mean, it's the same thing with everything medically related.
And along those lines, this was I talked about this before, and I was talking about the 9 takeaways from the European Society of Cardiology meeting. This was a review of a couple of studies, one in the New England Journal and the other in the Journal of the Lancet, looking at aspirin. And we talked about it some before, but I want to make sure we understand. In the first study, it's called the ARRIVE study, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it will be formally published October 1st. About 12,000 non-diabetic patients were randomized to taking either 100 milligrams of aspirin or a placebo daily, and they were over age 55. They had cardiac risk factors, but they did not have cardiac disease. The question is, if you are non-diabetic, over age 55, and you have a risk for heart disease but no heart disease, would aspirin help you? And they followed them for 5 years, and they found no cardiovascular benefit. Heart attack and stroke incidence was about 4% in both groups. Bleeding was higher in the people who took the aspirin. So you're sitting there, you're in your 50s, and you say, well, what can I do to make myself healthier? Maybe I should take an aspirin every day. The ARRIVE study says, no, you shouldn't.
Well, historically, aspirin was about all they had, right, years ago. Now we've got all these other medicines that help with the heart.
Right.
So it could just be that aspirin, in addition to the other things, doesn't add any value.
Yeah, and that's been a thing, hasn't it? I mean, we know more about diet than we used to. We made a lot of mistakes with loading up people on carbs to try to avoid fats, and that was a bad diet. We know more about medications. And the statins here in your 50s, this is when they really can make a difference. And we also know that blood pressure control, depending on the degree of strictness, can also lower your risk of heart disease. These were things we didn't know before. So if you go back into the 60s, if you were to time travel into the 60s, you should probably take an aspirin because it's maybe your only thing you've got to protect yourself from heart disease. When you get into the 2010s, though, there are a lot of other players, and aspirin, in addition to those, just did not work out in this study that will be published in the New England Journal of Medicine October 1st. There was also a second study called the ASCEND study. This was in 15,000 diabetic patients. And they were randomized to take 100 milligrams of aspirin or a placebo, and they followed for 7 years. The vascular events was 1 percentage point lower in the aspirin than the placebo group. It was 8.5% versus 9.5% had some type of cardiovascular event. But the incidence of major bleeding events was 1 percentage point higher, 4% versus 3.2%. So you traded GI bleeding for heart events, and overall, no significant life expectancy benefit. So non-diabetics, no known benefit. Diabetics, a benefit in the heart, but at the risk of harm in the GI system, and no known overall benefit. So once again, when we talk about things like everybody taking an aspirin, everybody taking a statin as long as they live, that's not good medicine. It's not individual medicine. We've talked a lot about individualized medicine. I hope to be able to learn my patient's genetics and then individualize their treatment. But right now, there's a lot of these guidelines that just simply want to treat everyone, every age, exactly the same way. And this is a reminder that age and pre-existing conditions makes a big difference. So once again, I'll repeat my theory, which...
Hypothesis.
Thank you.
If you're going to be a scientific show, Tony, be a scientific show.
Right.
That lifestyle is very important in teenage years and 20s and 30s. You've got to develop that lifestyle that includes regular exercise, that includes a healthy diet. You've got to do that. That to set that as a foundation. You may need medication for a period in your life if your blood pressure, your sugar, your cholesterol, or other risk factors come into play, or if you do have a heart attack despite your best efforts. But then as you get older, at some point, those medications likely to cause more harm than benefit and should be tapered off. Speaking of tapered off,
special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember these statements, most of which are absolutely true.
Not. The Safe Drinking Water and Toxic Enforcement Act of 1986, better known as Proposition 65, requires businesses operating in the state of California to provide clear and reasonable warnings that chemicals used in the production of their goods or products are known to cause cancer, birth defects, or other reproductive injuries.
Since Health Matters has known listeners in California, this warning is for you, Bill. Health Matters can expose you to radio waves that are known to the state of California to cause cancer or birth defects or other reproductive harm.
A study by the U.S. National Toxicology Program exposed large groups of lab rats and mice to types of radio waves similar used in Health Matters. The animals were exposed over their entire bodies for about 9 hours a day, starting before birth and continuing up to 2 years.
Oh, Lord, have mercy.
In a draft report of the final results issued in February of 2018, the study found an increased risk of rare heart tumors in the male rats exposed to radio waves, although there was no increased risk among female rats or among male or female mice in the study.
The male rats also lived longer than rats who were not exposed to radio waves for unclear reasons. Some aspects of this study make it hard to know what these results might mean for people, but the results add evidence to the idea that radio waves might potentially impact human health.
While Health Matters does not use the same type of radio waves as these rats receive, just like Starbucks, we cannot prove that our show does not cause cancer, and therefore we owe California lawyers millions and millions of dollars in damages.
Whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.